Hello and welcome to the Art is Hard podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Seiler. I've got a really great guest today, and I'm excited for you all to hear our conversation. So let's get through this intro as quick as we can. First off, I want to thank everyone who's been listening consistently. I've been checking the stats, and as far as I can tell, there's a consistent number of people listening in each week. And so I wanted to thank you all for sticking with this podcast through its infancy here. It's definitely been a trial by fire, so I really appreciate it. And I'm glad you all are liking it enough to listen each week. All right, so this week I have a really awesome guest. I sat down with Danielle Durack, a local singer-songwriter here in Phoenix, and we talked a bit about how she got started, the anxiety and isolation that kind of fueled her getting into music, the process of recording her debut album, Bonnie Rose, and a little about the love-hate relationship with music theory in terms of composition and creating songs. Danielle was a pleasure to talk to, and I'm really glad to share this with you all. So please enjoy episode 5 of the Art is Hard podcast, Danielle Durack. Sort of gist of the podcast is about essentially talking to people about their creative process and how it reflects their thoughts and motivations about creating art. So I guess the first thing I wanted to ask you is just to kind of give us a little bit of a background of how you kind of got into music, what you've been doing over the course of the last couple of years, and kind of just where you're coming from as far as music goes.
Cool. So I guess I started like anybody else, like feel like toddlers like sing, you know, it's something that you're encouraged to do way more when you're a kid. And I guess I'm just like the kid that never really grew out of it or whatever. I was really nervous. Like I didn't sing in front of people until I was in high school, essentially. That was kind of when it all started. I had been writing songs though since I was in fifth grade.
Oh wow.
Some real jams from that era. Yeah. I'd show close friends the songs. My parents didn't really know that I liked to sing or wanted to sing, but I've always known that I wanted to do music, like make a living making music.
Nice. So talking about coming in, starting to perform in front of people in, you know, your high school years, how did you kind of find that singer-songwriter is the sort of style for you? I guess a lot of people in that, you know, time are trying to form bands and trying to, you know, always be a, you know, find other people to collaborate with, but it seems like you're very self-propelled.
Yeah. I think that comes from insecurity, actually, just like not wanting to show other people, I guess, or like have to face criticism, like, I guess, from other people. I think the singer-songwriter thing also stems from like the kind of music that I was into. Like I loved Sara Bareilles in high school, and like Norah Jones and Adele, you know, all the pop stuff. It's just, it was definitely what I listened to, and it was what I liked to sing in it.
Very nice. Yeah. Well, so I guess that kind of definitely brings up an interesting topic. One that I kind of, you know, deal with a lot too, is the sense of kind of the ownership of your own songs. I know with, you know, when in a band context, it's very collaborative and very, very, you know, everyone's bouncing ideas off of each other. But I think the singer-songwriter route sort of lends itself to a more personal approach, which I think is very reflective in your music. I've been listening to it over the course of the last couple of days that we've been in contact, and it's definitely like, it seems very self-reflective and self kind of, it very focused on sort of almost like an internal dialogue.
Totally. Yeah. And that's also, I think, why I don't work, or why I wasn't jumping into bands in high school or pursuing it. It's just it's all very like confessional, I guess, my music.
Yeah. Well, I think that's good. I think that's definitely, I mean, that's one of the things we'll probably talk about a little bit later in the podcast. But one of the things that I think is very interesting, especially coming from the singer-songwriter thing, because it's sort of your music is a reflection of you as a person. And so I think that's really interesting. But let's talk a little bit about, so since there's sort of the lack of a collaborative effort in this thing, let's talk about how you get started writing. I know that's kind of one of the things that I find very interesting about people who are writing music or creating anything in general is how they start or how they take an idea from just a seed of an idea to a full-fledged thing. So I guess what's the spark that sort of lights the flame for you?
Gosh, this is like always the hardest question. Like it's like different every time. Like whatever, like if it's a piano, like a chord progression that starts it, or just like a line of piano, or, you know, a like couplet, like a melody, or just a couple words that spark like the idea. But it's just if the mood strikes and it's like good and I can run with it, it just happens. I don't know like what, I don't have like a formula to it. I wish so much that I did.
Yeah.
Cause it would be, it'd be so much easier, or not easier, but I wouldn't have to stress about like my well being dry or like never writing anything of value ever again.
Well, it's definitely interesting that you say that, because we've had a couple other guests on the podcast who have talked about sort of being a conduit of sorts, where it's like it's when that creative spark strikes, it seems like it just sort of flows through you, and it's just more of like a,
it barely feels like me writing.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. So I guess, so when you've got your first idea, where are you starting? I know you play both guitar and piano. How are you sort of envisioning a song going based off of that first little, writing period?
I guess I'll use like an example as one of my songs. Cause like it's kind of different every time, but like there was like the song Carry On. It's the last track on Bonnie Rose. I was in the shower and, the like bridge part, the lyrics of it kind of just came up or whatever. And I was like singing it in the shower, and I was on vacation, so I didn't have my guitar or a piano or anything. And I remember just like singing it over and over again in the shower, cause I was really anxious I was going to lose it. And, recorded it on my phone and went home, literally like got off the plane. My dad picked me up from the airport, and I, you know, locked myself in my room and like wrote the song. And that part originally was going to be the intro to the song, and it just didn't fit there, and it ended up being somewhere else. It ended up going in the bridge. But yeah, it writes itself. Like, I guess I don't have any like method to like, this sounds like it should, I don't know, be here. It all falls together.
When it's all kind of completed, it's kind of like a weird sort of like you have all these puzzle pieces,
exactly,
and it's just a matter of finding the right spots. But it's interesting that you say that you are in the shower, because like I do the same exact thing where it's like I'll be in the shower. That's where I have like, I mean, I think everyone can probably attest to this, but it's
best ideas.
It's like the best ideas come out of the shower. I think it's because of that sort of idea that you're
forced to do nothing, essentially.
Yeah, exactly. It's like you're because you have this like, well, the white noise of the shower, and then also just that fact that you're there for like X amount of minutes or whatever, that it sort of lets you fall into this place of like just sort of open, almost like a meditative state.
Yeah.
Which is, I think is interesting. So that's kind of like the how you sort of, you know, are creating things. Let's talk about taking it from just the idea to the full-fledged thing. Because obviously, again, same thing with singer-songwriter, you've got really yourself to sort of rely on. Mm-hmm. So on your album, Bonnie Rose, it's a full production. And so can you tell me a little bit about how you took it from just some, you know, ideas or demos and things like that to this fully realized product?
Yeah, so my friend Nick Tantillo, he's a audio engineer. I've known him since I was in like seventh grade. We did like another project in like 2014. It was just acoustic, essentially demos that he did for me. And he was going through school for audio engineering. We were both just kind of like starting out. I barely knew how to play guitar or any instrument for that matter at that point in time. So we had this like bonding experience with our like first real thing. And I knew I wanted to work with him on like a fully produced project. And I knew that I wanted to hear my songs fully produced. And I didn't hire, you know, like studio musicians or whatever. I just happen to know a lot of very talented people from actually high school choir.
Oh, nice.
Which worked out really well in my favor. Actually, everyone but the bassist was with me in high school choir at Saguaro.
Oh, wow.
Voices, yeah.
That's cool. That's so it's a little bit of like a kind of a little reunion of sorts.
Yeah, no. And it was, we went up to Munns Park. I think it's just south of Flagstaff. And Nick brought all of his gear up and we recorded it in this cabin in Munns Park.
That's
it was,
cool.
It was such a good experience with like all these people that I knew. And it was like a vacation with friends, except I got an album out of it.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting that you say that, because I know there's a lot of people who that's like almost a way to sort of push the wheel forward, so to speak, or, yeah. to find, beat the inertia of, mm-hmm. of that sort of need to start creating, like, right. What's his name?
The constrained time frame.
Exactly. Yeah. I know that there's that guy, Bon Iver, mm-hmm. who's like, that's his thing, is he goes off and, he'll go off into some sort of cabin or something somewhere and then come back with like a masterpiece record.
Yeah, we made that joke many times.
But it's interesting because it forces you to sort of focus on just what's there in that moment and like what's happening and seeing it from, you have this small amount of time to get it done. Otherwise, mm-hmm. it doesn't get done. Like we had another guy on the podcast talk similarly about that, where it was almost like he had to book the studio time first before the record was written. So that way it would like kick him in the pants to get started.
That's a good idea.
that's interesting. So let's talk a little bit about how the, so you've got this song, these songs down, mm-hmm. the structure's all there, the production's all there. I think one of the things, again, going back to the song, singer-songwriter thing, how do you know when you are finished? When's sort of the time where you can put the pen down and say, that's it. That's the way I want it to be.
It's interesting, like, you say that. I was just thinking, because I'm in the process of writing, like, a new project, and I've been... It's my first time using any kind of like recording software on my own. Mm. I've been making demos and like, I really don't know, like if I didn't have somebody like a producer or like somebody else doing it for me, like artists who produce themselves, I don't know how you would ever like decide to be done. Cause like, I feel like when it's up to somebody else and they're like, no, it's like good. I guess that's like such a cop out. It's like they say it's good, so like it's good, it's fine, it's done. But with writing, I mean, I guess it's kind of the same thing I was saying earlier. It really just falls together. And like, I don't know who said it. He did the artwork on the ceiling, the 16 chapels or whatever.
Oh, Michelangelo.
He said like, it's never really done. Like you can always add more. You can always it's never done, and it's up to you to decide if it's to be continued or not.
That's interesting. I think that brings up a good point where it's sort of like, yeah, you could like, I always think about that when when doing creative stuff too. It's just like, I could add more to this, or I couldn't, or I could just, it's like at some point you just have to let it be the thing that it wants to be,
mm-hmm.
and like let it kind of, It becomes then the, like, a good example is Jackson Pollock. We were talking about it on the last podcast, so it's still a little bit on my brain. But, like, Jackson Pollock, his style of artwork was so, spastic, and so there was no real form to it, so to speak. It was just him, splattering paint on a canvas.
Yeah.
So it's like, how does he know when he's done? And it's almost when he's, like, exercised the feeling of whatever he's feeling into the canvas, and when he's been able to, like, push through it, that's when it's done.
Right.
And so... So it's interesting. So let's talk a little bit about the, I guess another aspect of the singer-songwriter route is the lyrics. So we talked a little bit about this a little earlier, but your lyrics have a very kind of self-reflective feeling behind them. Mm-hmm. I wonder if you could just speak to us a little bit about that and kind of why, how it came to be that. Because I know a lot of people tend to write about stuff that's external to themselves.
Yeah.
But again, yours is more inwardly focused and kind of more personal. So I was wondering how you kind of got to that point or sort of felt like that was what you wanted to write about rather than just what's going on in the world or whatever.
Okay, without making too much of a sob story myself, again, I started writing in fifth grade and was a very lonely kid. So I think that's like, that is why I started writing music, as like an outlet to, I don't know, just either to kill time and also like vent my angsty little emotions, or like, I don't know. I think that's definitely where it started. But I've tried to write songs about things or tell stories. And I think anything else sounds preachy to me. Mm. Not when other people do it, but when I try and do it, I hate it.
Yeah.
Like, I think like there's just something like inauthentic about when I try to write about things. It sounds like verging on educational. Mm. Like, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, it's almost like you're the only thing you can truly know about is yourself.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, because I find that too, where it's like, you know, you'll try to say something about, you know, what something that's going on
right.
in the world, and it's just like, who am I to say this, you know?
Right.
That's where I always get, you know, stopped up. But totally. But yeah, it's interesting that you say that and that kind of brings me to the next question that I like to ask is how, so obviously the lyrics and the music being so personal to yourself, how do you approach opening up this sort of your world to the audience? It's, you know, it definitely puts a magnifying glass on you as an artist, but so I was all, you know, obviously that stirs up a lot of fear in people, you know, when people are getting ready to release something and it's like, how are people going to receive this? But again, it's like the album is somewhat of a reflection of yourself. So I was wondering kind of how you approach that.
Yeah, honestly, I didn't think about it. Like, it's something that, that now worries me, like now that it's out there and, now that I'm hyper aware of what I'm writing now that I know that people are going to hear it.
Mm.
Which sucks. Just having like that filter on my like creativity is just awful. And I would like, I'm trying to work through that. But yeah, no, when I went to release Bonnie Rose, I was like, you know, it's time. Like, I have these songs, I've done nothing with these songs, and I just, you know, I wrote them for people to hear them, and it's time for them to come out. But I wasn't scared for whatever reason. I guess they are really like revealing. but yeah, I think it's more affected my creativity afterwards and the way that I think about putting music out there and why I make music now is kind of different.
Interesting. Yeah. Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's just, I don't know if anybody else has this experience or had this experience as a kid, but like when you like try or you're like doing something really cool and you like shout to like your mom or your dad and you're like, come check this out. It's like really cool. I can do this thing. And then they come and they watch and you can't do it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It like feels like that. Like now that I know like people are like, not that a ton of people are listening, but now that I know that that my music will be available for anyone if they so choose to listen, it's weird. I don't know what to write anymore. Or I don't know. It definitely is present in my mind when I write, and that isn't my favorite.
Well, yeah, there's definitely that expectation that sort of now that you have like a certain bar that you set,
yeah,
it's now how do you meet that bar and then move up.
Yeah,
so that's interesting. So I guess another thing is from a performance aspect also, you're performing more often than not either with a, you know, a small band or on your own.
Mm-hmm.
How do you, sort of going back to the same question but from a different angle, how are you approaching performance of this very personal material, and how do you cope with that sort of like, I'm up on stage, spotlight's on me type of thing that I think a lot of people get very, you know, a lot of people are writers and things like that, but mm-hmm. then when it comes time to like put it out there, they're like, well, wait, I don't want to be on the front of the thing or have all this exposed. So how do you sort of kind of approach the performance side of that same sort of idea?
I've been nervous. Like, and when I started in high school, I would literally shake on stage. Like,
oh, wow.
it would, like, yeah, I, And I don't know if you've ever tried to sing while you're shaking, but it doesn't sound awesome. And I've, like, to this day, I'm still working through that fear, but I guess it's never really been, like, I write songs for myself, and I enjoy singing. Again, back to the thing, like, where you want to show your parents, it's like you get really excited about these things that you can do, and then it comes time to, like, actually do them, and the pressure's on, and it's a lot harder. but I really enjoy, like, playing in front of people, and I enjoy, like, kind of giving that vulnerability away.
Well, I think that speaks to something definitely very true about music, and I think that's, even though it's like nerve-wracking to be up there, that sort of, I think that's what people most appreciate about music is its vulnerability. I think, you know, there's so many people, like, you listen to, I don't know, there's a couple bands that I have that like, it's almost like driving a knife into your heart.
Yeah, it just knocks just
like,
you on your ass.
Yeah, it knocks you on your ass. Yeah. And like, when you're experiencing that live, it's almost that sort of like, again, kind of going back to the idea of that exercising of emotion type mm-hmm. of thing, where it's like, it gives people the freedom to sort of relate and then mm-hmm. also let their, you know, their darkest things or whatever's milling about their brain out in a performance. It's almost like a ritual.
I've also been thinking about that recently. Like, I'm still in school and I'm taking this class about, like, arts management. And I've been thinking about, like, how music just enables people to feel, like, empathy. Like, people who are just so, like, cold-hearted, mm-hmm. like, can, like, relate to people they share almost nothing in common with, like, just because they're there and they're listening and... I don't know. It makes people listen. I'm like, I guess that's the secret, as it's, you know, it's music and you're forced to try to understand.
Yeah. And it's kind of like people are a little, they see something, they see a reflection of their self in the music. I think that's what a lot of people, I mean, some people might just like listening to something cause it sounds good or, but on the same level, it's like, if it's a chord or something that hits mm-hmm. you in the right way, then it's like, who's to say that that's not some sort of emotional experience?
Right.
Whereas from a lyrical standpoint, it's very, you know, you're hearing someone say back to you the things that you've already heard in your own mind. At least that's the way I kind of think about it. And that's definitely what I felt, you know, when I was listening to your music over the course of the week here, that it's very, it's one of those things where it's kind of like, I don't know, to me, I'm also somewhat of an, like a, not, I don't know. I am somewhat of a alone. I mean, I'm living here in my apartment by myself. So, but it's like, you know, I'm someone who's definitely caught up in their own mind for sure. And so that's what your music definitely spoke to me about, was this sort of idea of kind of self-analysis and sort of not really knowing the answer to a question, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
So I guess, where were you kind of coming from, or what was your sort of headspace in the actual writing process, kind of with regard to like your lyricism and your, and just kind of coming up with your structures and things like that?
I spent a lot of time, like, I still love singer-songwriters. It's like one of my favorite genres. So I think that there is like kind of like a formulaic structure with the genre. Like I think that kind of like decided itself, but as far as like the like content of my songs, it was, all those songs were written over the course of like 4 years. Mm. Like it was my first work, so there, you know, I had songs to cherry pick from my whole life. They're all more or less about like relationships, like gone wrong.
As a lot of songs are.
Right, yeah.
I think that's pretty much, I'd say that's probably the majority of songs.
Yeah, it's definitely something we can all relate to.
Well, that's true. And I think that kind of gets back to that idea of like sort of the human aspect of music. It's definitely something that captures what it means to be a complex human being full of feelings, especially in kind of, you know, I think at least to me, a lot of singer-songwriter music definitely appeals to an audience that's definitely still kind of in their how do I put this? Like they're still growing up, so to speak.
Yeah.
Not to say that they're, you know, someone who's mature can't listen to a singer songwriter and appreciate it on some level, but I think it definitely resonates a lot with people who are a little bit younger who are going through this type of thing at the same time that they're, you know, hearing this. Like for me, it was like, I remember back in high school when I, like, Death Cab for Cutie was a big deal.
Yeah.
And like at the time I wasn't super into it, but like now going back and thinking about like my mindset during those formative years, the music now speaks to me so much more than it did then. So it's almost like this weird kind of like backdoor into the appreciation of a band.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's definitely like an interesting way to kind of approach sort of letting it out to people who are receptive.
Yeah.
So can you speak a little bit about how the, just for the people who are, kind of to switch gears here, for the people who are sort of also trying to explore, you know, their feelings and their motivations and things like that, can you give any advice to people about how to sort of start that process or how to, what they can do to kind of sort of do the same thing that you're doing and sort
like
of...
Like how to write songs?
Or just how to like... How to motivate themselves, I guess, would be a better way.
Okay. Yeah. I think that the back to the shower thing, I think spending time alone is really important to, like, creativity in general. Like, if you want to do anything creative, you kind of have to, like, rid yourself of distractions and let whatever's in there come out. Which can be hard if you've got a lot of, like, repressed things down there. But, yeah, I think that would be like the main thing. And that's like something that I don't allow a ton of for myself. It's very easy to just kind of like distract yourself. There's so many things.
Oh yeah. There's always some new show on Netflix or Hulu or whatever.
Yep.
Well, it's interesting that you say that. Cause like I've been listening to, or I've been exploring sort of the world of meditation a little bit. And one of the things that's kind of interesting about that is it's sort of a way to force yourself to take a look at yourself in a very honest and open way, which is, I think, difficult for a lot of people. So how do you incorporate that into your songwriting, and how do you incorporate sort of, I mean, again, kind of going back to your lyrics as being, they're very self-reflective and very like personal. And it's like, how are you shining that mirror on yourself and forcing yourself to look at it?
I think in the past it was because no one ever like would hear my songs. It was just like a way for me to get it all out without, like, it's similar to when people tell you to like write letters to people you're mad at and then don't send them. Like, you'll get all your emotions out and like no one gets mad at you. It's great. It's kind of, I think it started like that. It was just like, it was a place, it was my diary. It was a place for me to like vent everything I was feeling and, you know, never have to really like deal with it any further. But now I think that the meditative thing is something that I have to like force on myself, that I have to create the conditions to write like that again, to be unfiltered and not like censored, and or to not censor myself, you know, just to write what I'm feeling and not worry about it.
Well, it's interesting that you say that, because, like, again, you spoke a little bit earlier about now having that feeling that people are sort of watching you in a way, versus prior to that, you know, you're more anonymous or more, it's more for yourself type of thing. And it's interesting that you say that, you mentioned that censorship, because I think that's something that also plagues a lot of people in the arts community is this idea that it's like, you know, especially in the age of social media, where we all see everyone else's and what they're doing.
Lives.
It's all, it's their lives. But also, it's very, it can be curated at times to where people are showing you what they want you to see in a way.
Yeah, and it's their highlight reel.
Their highlight reel. Exactly. That's a perfect way of putting it. And it I think it induces a sort of weird shame on people about expressing themselves, because they feel like they're not going to be up to that. Sort of standard that they see or are sort of imposing upon themselves based off of what they're seeing around. I was just wondering if you could kind of talk a little bit about that, and how, if that's kind of has affected you or.
Totally. I mean, like in every aspect of my life, like not just in art, but I mean, you really have to put the blinders on. If you want to do anything, like, you have to just kind of, like, not necessarily ignore other people, but, like, know on a very, like, core level that it doesn't matter what other people are doing, and it has no bearing on, like, what you are going to do. Like, it is, it's its own entity or whatever.
Yeah.
And, yeah, no, I definitely, like, get caught up in, you know, I'll get anxiety about, like, people getting, like, opportunities and, like, you know, just different things that are, that will spark that kind of, like, I need to try harder. I need to do better. Like, but it's so important to just know that you're on your own little path, as corny as that sounds.
True. Well, it's interesting that you said that. Yeah, I've definitely had this sort of a mindset over the last, probably, like, since about June-ish of last year, that's just sort of like, you sort of eventually come to the reason. For me, I don't know, for me, it used to be very, very caught up with what everyone else was doing. And like, oh, how does this, how can I do that? How can I do that? How can I do that? But then it's kind of like the idea that no one really knows better than anyone else.
Yeah.
And that, so therefore it's like, it's okay to just do whatever you want, because that's really in the scope of the, you know, I guess you could say in the scope of the universe in totality, all we really know is kind of, again, that sort of, all you know is yourself. So that's what's important type of thing.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Super. Yeah. Liberating. To, once you have that.
Well, and so I think that's another thing. There's that same idea going back to this, idea of meditation. One of the things that they talk about is, it's like one of the barriers into it is that it's, people get frustrated with the trying. It's like, it's one of those things where it's like, it only really works if you stop trying to do it.
Right.
And so I feel like music is kind of a little bit like that.
Yes. Where
it's like, okay, yeah.
Yes. Yeah. If I ever, my worst songs are the songs that I like wanted to write, if that makes sense. Like that I like, if I try too hard, it's total shit. Like, it never fails. Like, if I try to write a song about XYZ, it again will sound preachy, borderline educational, like, just not good, so forced. And like, I think that's something that I listen to music and because like of the authenticity of it. Or my perceived authenticity of, you know, whoever's singing what. It's just, it's real. And like, that's like, I think that's like so important in it. And whenever that gets lost in my writing process, it's like very clear. Like it's noticeable.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, it's almost like, it's that sort of idea of the true self, like, and being true to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Yeah. Cause I definitely have encountered that with my writing process where it's like, you're exactly right. The stuff that like feels forced, oftentimes it comes across that way too.
Yeah, it does. I mean, I believe that people can see like inauthenticity from like a mile away. I just feel like people can sense it. Mm. Like, they know when you're not being real with them.
Yeah.
And I don't know, nobody wants to listen to anything like that.
That's true. Yeah. And it also kind of brings up a good point that, you know, especially when you're someone who's kind of been on your own and have that where kind of that same place that you feel like you're coming from, that sort of isolated or thing, it becomes very difficult to like to be authentic, because it's almost like a double-edged sword type of thing. It's like, you want to be authentic, but that's
paradox.
Same thing that like is causing all this anxiety,
right?
Of like, how are people going to receive this? So it's like this weird, so how do you deal with that? That sort of, I guess, like a paradox.
Yeah. I just keep trying. I don't have the answers yet by any means. Like, I don't deal with it very well. Let's like put that out there. But, I just keep trying and keep trying to be open to like what moves me. I mean, I feel like most artists have like a feeling, like when they've got something like, there will literally be moods where I'm just like, I need to get home.
Like, pronto.
Yeah. And like close the door. but I think that just trying to be open to what moves me as opposed to trying to move things myself.
So what then, I guess that begs the question, what does move you?
I don't know. This weather's really nice. I mean, you know, I don't know. I'm inspired by different things. It's and it's strange because like a lot of my like songs are like, again, bitter songs about like failed relationships, but I can't really write when I'm like angry or like sad. Like it really does have to be like a reflective kind of period. I have to be calm and be able to like, I don't know.
Almost like a therapeutic process.
Yep. Yeah. It's, again, I think the solitude and just, being able to reflect is like what really like inspires me.
Interesting. Yeah. So I guess, that kind of leads me to the next idea is, so you've released your album, are you touring? Are you, are just doing shows around town?
Yeah. So I'm not touring yet. It's in the plan, the big plan at some point. I've been doing little shows around town. Yeah. I haven't, or before the album came out last March. So I've only been doing this for 10 months so far, but I didn't play a show anywhere before that album came out. I mean, I would play like coffee shops and stuff. So I'm fairly new to the scene and like, I'm really excited to put out new work and just keep trying. I've been writing and plans to record next month.
Oh, nice.
Something kind of small, like four songs or so.
Very nice. So I guess one of the things I think would be interesting to talk about is how have you seen kind of your evolution as a songwriter over the last, you know, last year since your last album came out?
Well, my spelling has gotten a lot better over my life. So I was actually just looking at one of my old journals and like literally like the first couple songs I ever wrote. And I was like, wow, I can hardly understand this. This is like so bad. I think I might be dyslexic or something because it was just awful. Anyways, sorry, you weren't asking about like spelling, but my songwriting has evolved. I think like as my vocabulary has gotten better, just, you know, being a human adult person and interacting and like reading and.
Well, you have more experiences now that you can draw from and more kind of like.
Totally.
More a different perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. I think like a lot of things that I wrote when I was like younger were like romanticized ideas about like what is to be and like the things that I've experienced now. It's like very, you know, it's more real. Like my writing is more, it's definitely more realistic and it's a little bit more cynical, but in my eyes, like more realistic and actual like take on reality.
Very nice. Well, I think one of the things I kind of admired about your songwriting from a musical standpoint was you definitely have a very interesting. I don't know if there's a word for it, but I call it flow. And it, even though that's kind of like a hip hop and rap term, but it definitely has like a. You have a very good way of moving words in a way that sort of it doesn't feel standardized. It doesn't feel like it's like a good example I think is the Beastie Boys. It would be a example of standardized flow in my opinion, where it's like na 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 da. And so with yours, I feel like it moves from so many different places. Like your music definitely, again, it's definitely more softer than the stuff that I play, which is death metal and grind. And all
we're
sorts
on
of
different ends
music.
Of the spectrum, for sure.
But what I like about it is that it starts one way, and oftentimes you're flipping kind of styles around, or you'll pick it up in a part where it's unsuspected. And so I think, how are you seeing your quote unquote flow develop as a musician over the last year and prior to that?
I've never really thought about it. I guess when I have those moments of inspiration and like when it is like lyrics first, like I'll have like a little couplet in my head or just like a little short phrase. And I just think it sounds cool, you know, where you're just like that, like really fits. And then, you know, again, it just kind of carries itself until it's over. And then I feel like I didn't even work hard at all. And it's just there. but yeah, I've never even considered my flow to be completely
well,
honest.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because a lot of singer-songwriters, that's kind of what separates them from the rest of the pack is the sort of idea of, I'm trying to think of a good example. Okay, like that Feist song that came out a long time ago, the 1, 2, 3, yeah. 4. It's very like dun dun dun, yeah. dun 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 dun. Like yeah. it's but it fits with the music. But it's easy for people to just write some 4-4 chord structure and then just sing over that. Mm-hmm. So how do you approach kind of that sort of creating that kind of structure or creating that, like, I mean, obviously you talked a little bit about how you sort of kind of let it flow, so to speak.
And
but is there anything that you're consciously thinking of as you're writing, or like tricks or techniques that you have for moving one part to another part?
No, I think I'm really nervous of like doing or like getting into like a formulaic thing. So like what I'm thinking about, if I'm thinking about anything when I'm writing, is like, don't do something you've done 30 times. And like, I think that like helps for me like to keep it like kind of fresh, I guess. And helps it kind of move in a way that like you said, maybe you don't expect it necessarily. And again, just like listening for, like if I'm trying to figure out like the next part of a song, I'll play a lot of different things until something sounds like good. You know, it really like clicks and I like it.
Nice. So I guess one of the other things that I've kind of been curious about, since your music is so piano driven and then also guitar driven, how do you approach writing for one versus the other?
Okay. So I'm really bad at guitar. Mm. I'm like very, very bad at guitar. I still to this day, I probably know 6 chords on guitar and don't know how to use a pick. Mm. So when I write for guitar, it's like exploratory, which is like cool.
That's kind of cool because it leads you to like, it's almost that sort of like, you don't know what to do, so right. Anything is possible.
Exactly. Which is like, that's another little thing that I've discovered with myself. If things ever get stale, I just need to try something like completely new. And tangent. But yeah, so when I write on guitar, I have no intention of playing guitar for myself on the record or on stage unless it's very, very simple. It's more to get a base for whatever melodic ideas end up coming of it. I'll just play the same thing over and over again until, the words start like spilling out or whatever. With piano, I can get really like caught up in like the theory of it. Sometimes like I'll like be like, I should go to the 5
or
like,
oh, yeah.
And it's like, I hate when I get like that because it just like kills the creative like exploratory kind of vibe. But yeah, sometimes I'll like write like a full progression on piano.
Nice.
I definitely am more I'm much better. Still mediocre, but much better on piano.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting that you bring up that the idea of the sort of theory, because at one time in my life, I was a music theory. I was going towards a bachelor's in a music theory at U of A. Dropped out after 2 years. But
I was gonna say that's a hard program.
Well, and it was challenging. That's for sure. But one of the things that I kind of appreciated was that it opens your eyes to the sort of form of understanding the things that like you might hear in a song. Like a perfect example to me is I've been listening to a bunch of George Harrison records or like his post Beatles records. And he does all these things where it's like, he'll do these descending moves and all these, and you can hear it throughout the Beatles too. I mean, especially in a song like Blackbird is a perfect example. Yeah. But he moves through these like these different chords in a very theoretical structure, but it feels like it's flowing.
Right.
And so
it
still
feels like a pop song.
Exactly. It still feels like a pop song. It doesn't ever feel forced, but it's nice I feel like it's one of the benefits of having that sort of theoretical background, even though it can at times
trap you.
Yeah. It also opens up the sort of like, you know that it's like, if you do this and then this and then this, it's almost like it is a formula. not in like a, I guess it can be in a bad way, but I sometimes feel like it is a good way. It gives you that tool to say like, how do I need to get from point A to point B?
And then it's about like when you want to break the rules.
Exactly.
Know what I mean?
Yes.
I totally agree. Totally lost my train of
thought. Sorry. It's like, it's really cool. Like when you, I don't know, for me, that was the coolest thing about music theory was learning the names and the symbols of these concepts.
These ideas. It's like, I remember now, it's like physics. It's just like all these things, like you understand, you know, when you're born, you understand how gravity works. Like, you know that it, like when you like fall, it's, you know, and when you drop things, they're going to hit the floor and not the ceiling. Like on a very core level, you understand how like physics works, but like getting the numbers behind it, it's just, I don't know.
It makes more sense from a visual standpoint where it's like, you might understand something or like, I mean, I think any of us, you know, in the Western civilization are definitely exposed for the most of our lives to music that's, for those people who don't know, it's called equal tempered music. And so that's when you've got, you know, your 12 keys on a piano or whatever. And then, but that's how we have come to understand music as a culture.
Right.
But it's interesting. So we know, you know, when you hear a cool chord change or like a borrowed chord from a different key, but relative to the key that you're in, it's one of those things that's, it's like you're saying, it's like it gives form to this sort of idea that you know you've heard before and it makes sense in your mind, but you don't fully understand it.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, so I guess how do you then take sort of, so when you're trying to like challenge yourself as a musician or trying to challenge yourself as like a songwriter, what approaches do you use to kind of like try to find something new or to explore different areas?
Yeah, I mean, I basically just I'll set parameters for myself sometimes. Like, I want to write a song in 6, you know, or in like 5, like weird meters. Mm. And then like, I'll try to like, you know, try a weird, not a weird, but like, you know, a different, not major or minor, do like a mixolydian or like just trying to, they're little exercises that I just make for myself, and sometimes they turn into like pretty okay songs, which is always like really cool.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the benefits of having that knowledge of like perfect examples, different modes.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you can stay in your, you know, Ionian mode and then just write your, I don't know, just whatever the standard either major or minor key is. But then when you're exploring kind of, especially with melody, I think that's where modal technique is so interesting, because when you adapt a different mode when you're playing in a different mode from the root mode of the song, it always ends up creating a melody that seems surprising and that doesn't feel too standardized.
Yeah.
So when you're kind of, I guess that's a perfect way to kind of go into like, when you're writing melody, I think is one of the kind of, again, another thing that singer-songwriters have a very specific focus on, is writing melody in comparison to the bass of the song. So how are you approaching melody? Is it something that you're just sort of kind of finding or hearing, or is it something that you try to like explore different ideas with?
Melody more than anything, like more than, you know, the chords or whatever, is just something that I kind of let happen. It's something that I like, I'll play the same chord progression over and over and over again and just try things until like I like it. And it's very like, you know, it's an experiment. It's not formulated at all. Mm. And I love that.
Yeah.
Like, I love that part of it.
Well, I think that's one of the true things that has to sort of be not totally forced or it has to flow freely. 'Cause I feel like with melody, especially from a singing standpoint, it definitely feels like that's the part that we lock onto the most, I think. I mean, you know, a chord structure is one thing, but the melody is the thing that's going to be the thing that you remember, the thing that's going to stick with you and make a song recognizable. How do you approach that sort of like knowing which, again, kind of knowing which way to go with a melody. Cause I think that's another thing that sort of has that aspect of when do you know it's done? Like, cause it, you know, you could go up, you could go down, right. You could go backwards, forwards.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, I mean, I really just try different things out. Cause like, again, you could do anything and it's just a matter of what feels right at the moment and sounds good to your ear at that point in time, fits your mood. Mm. If you already have like pre-existing like lyrics, you know, fits kind of like the vibe of the song. But yeah, like I really like it to just kind of feel good. Like singing in general is like a very, like it's a physical act, you know, like breathing and singing, and I like to do what feels and sounds good.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting that you mentioned that it's kind of a physical act, because that's one of the things that I definitely notice with singing is that it's, and that's kind of a way I feel like is a good way to know when something's right, is when it, like when you're singing and you're going through this like physical process, which is, I mean, not to boil it down to like the biology or chemistry by any means, but there is a chemical reaction going on in your brain. And so it's like when you feel something and you're sort of in that zone singing, you feel that a little bit of like a dopamine rush or like a, yeah. So can you kind of talk a little bit about like how you're feeling when you're singing and how do you kind of invoke that expressive feeling in singing to where it feels like it's not just singing to sing? Cause like, yeah. To give you an example, there's some singers out there who I feel they're singing almost like in a science. And I feel like it's very, like I've encountered a few opera singers who are like, yeah. This, that they can sing. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. They're like, they've got the pipes, but right. What they're singing and how they're singing is very
calculated.
Exactly.
Yeah. Again, I think it's a lot easier for me to have that kind of, emotional like experience and like the good, like, feeling from singing when I'm not singing in front of people. I think it's very well, I'm still working through the nerve issue. It's, you know, it's very hard to feel like joyful and just that, you know, that feeling you get from singing. If I mean, everybody knows that feeling, everybody's like singing in their car, so like, yeah. People get what I'm saying. But yeah, like it's definitely a lot harder to get to that place when I am singing in front of people. But when I do get to that place, it's like there's like no other feeling in the world. That's, it's like the most incredible feeling.
Yeah. Well, and again, it kind of speaks again to that sort of that meditative aspect of it, because yeah. It's like that, you know, and when you're singing, I think, yeah, like you said, everyone's sang in the car before, and if they don't, they're lying. Yeah. But like the, you know, that's situation where you're sort of putting all of your anxieties away.
Fully invested.
Exactly. You're invested. You're not. This might happen for people when they're drunk karaokeing.
Right, exactly.
But like you've sort of put these anxieties away and you're almost like telling the world, it's like, I don't really care about anything else except for what's happening right here, right now.
Yeah.
And I think that's definitely one of the ways people can kind of get into that mode and face that fear, so to speak.
Yeah, totally.
I mean, I know for me, when my band is performing, I've talked about this on that episode with Jeff, but I also like to have a little booze beforehand, yeah. Just because it loosens you up a little bit.
Agreed, but there is too loose.
Also, yeah, there is definitely too loose,
which,
for sure.
Which is why I don't perform gigs anymore.
Well, and to be fair, I also have I play bass in my band, so it's not, definitely not the focal point of the band. But at the same time, it's like, for me, I found that sort of almost putting myself in a trance in a way,
yeah.
Kind of helps, where it's like you know, the audience is there, but it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
Like, which is hard to, again, when you're the bass player and you can just not look at the audience and be
No, I get it. Like, I know what you're saying. And like I usually get there by like the third song. Like I can like get into that state. And it's funny, like the singing doesn't bother me as much anymore in front of people. It's like the before and after and all the like dumb shit that I like inevitably will say to these people and just make them, you know, think I'm an idiot or hate me or whatever.
Oh no, I totally understand. Like I feel the same way. It's funny, starting this podcast, I felt the same every time I go into a podcast. Uh-huh. It's very, there's so much anxiety around it. I'm like, oh God, how's this going to go? How's this going to go? And yeah. Then as I'm doing it, then it's like, oh, what was I worrying about? And then afterwards, I'm like, how are people going to think about that? Like,
exactly.
It's such, and same thing with music too. It's like you, again, you're talking about it. It was like you have, once you've like built this idea up and then it finally comes time to show people, that's when the nerves strike, or that's when it's like debilitating almost.
Yeah. Which is very inconvenient.
So another thing I wanted to kind of talk to you about, again, kind of going a little bit back to the process of things. How are you preparing your songs for the production side of things? So as you're writing and getting things developed or developing ideas, how are you sort of recording these things, or how are, maybe not recording, but just getting them to a place where they have the skeleton of the song?
Yeah. For Bonnie Rose, I had help making like the demos for it. And, it was literally just piano and voice on all the tracks, and they sounded so bad. Like the MIDI piano was,
oh yeah,
that, like real tingy, like, yep. piano sound. And, I wasn't, you know, on my game for like the vocals either. So those were just kind of like, these are the songs. Like, let's, and you know, all the musicians wrote their own parts on like Bonnie Rose. I kind of just like showed them the songs, and they, you know, had the reins to do whatever they wanted with it, with, you know, within reason. I didn't have to tell any of them that I hated anything. So that was cool.
That's always nice. I think that's one of the one beneficial thing of kind of having the musicians that are not part of like the collaborative effort of the band, mm-hmm. or the writing side, but more, even though, you know, I mean, the musicians that you worked with were your friends, but having someone who's a musician who's not 100% invested in the band almost allows it to be
breathe
and like be written a little bit easier. Kind of the example that I give is, I used to work in a recording studio in Los Angeles where we would have a lot of artists come in, and they would be like singer-songwriters, or just like a small band, or like maybe two or three people in the band.
Yeah.
And then they would oftentimes work with the producer and engineer team that would bring in a group of studio musicians that they knew really well.
Right.
And so it was kind of an interesting way to watch music being made in that way, because you see the original idea of the song as it stands. And then each of these individuals kind of brings their own little flair to the song to kind of create it into this, you know, this fully like full band type of thing. I think would you agree that it kind of helps that it like to kind of open the door to different ideas?
Yeah, absolutely. I was like, I mean, to this day, I still like, you know, credit the band for like bringing my songs to life. Mm. Like it was, you know, I wrote the songs and they were songs before, but you know, everybody who worked on it, like made it just, it was so exciting to see like every part be added. And like, I think it really gives the songs like these characters that I never could have like, you know, brought in myself.
Yeah. You know? Well, and it's interesting. I think that's one of the things that's also kind of cool about approaching it the way you did, is that it sort of, when you're kind of isolated from the rest of the world and have just that one thing to focus on, it puts people in this very kind of rhythm. Some might say tunnel vision. I think that is like a danger of it, but at the same time, it's like, especially when it's a close group and everyone sort of starts feeling that sort of connection to where it's like everyone's like, I know, like when we're writing a song and it starts like flowing, it's just like, it's almost like bam, bam,
you're on
bam,
the same wavelength.
Everyone's on the same wavelength. Exactly. I think that's kind of an interesting way of like approaching it, especially, and I think that's true for a lot of singer songwriters, is they have the meat of the song, they just have to add the bones.
Yeah.
And then the musicians are the bones.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's kind of a good way to kind of wrap it up here. If people wanted to find your music and kind of interact with you, how would they go about doing that?
So I'm on pretty much everything. I'm on Spotify. I'm on Bandcamp. iTunes. My name is Danielle Durack. I have Facebook. Definitely follow me on there. And my website has my calendar if you want to come see a show. I don't have anything booked at the moment. I think I have something in February, but nothing super substantial at this point in time. But But yeah, new music coming out.
Well, so what's kind of next? You mentioned that you're working on something new. So where are you in the development process for that?
So I am just finishing up, like this week I should be done with the demos for a 4-song EP. That's kind of the goal. I don't know when, definitely this year, but I don't know when. I don't have a ballpark on a release date, but new music in 2018.
In 2018. You heard it here first.
Yeah.
Well, Danielle, it was great talking to you. It was a very, very fun conversation, and I'm excited to hear what you have next for us. But the last thing I wanted to ask you is kind of the way we sort of wrap up the show is by asking the question, what do you specifically think makes great art or art great?
I mean, we touched on it a little bit, but I just think it's authenticity and like just being genuine. I think what makes art great is, I don't know, the fact that it's human and that it kind of connects people. And yeah, the honesty behind it and the authenticity, it's my favorite part.
All right. Well, that sounds like a good answer to me.
Yeah.
Well, thanks again for being here, and
thank you so much for having me.
All right. Thanks again to Danielle for chatting with me. It was a really good conversation. I'm glad we got the chance to connect. So if you like what you heard, please go check out Danielle's album, Bonnie Rose. Give it a listen or two. And, if you get the chance, check her out live. That's it for this week. So if you want to keep up to date, follow the podcast on Twitter at Art Is Hard Pod and on Instagram and Facebook at Art Is Hard Podcast. Thanks again for listening. And until next week, see ya.